Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the March 25th, 2025 regular meeting of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. I'm Commissioner Myrna Melgar, chair of this board. Our vice chair is Denny Sauter. Welcome, colleagues. The clerk today is Amy Sayoung. I would also like to acknowledge Janie Lee at SFGov TV for staffing this meeting. Madam Clerk, please call the roll and make your announcements.
Commissioner Chan? Chan absent. Commissioner Chen? Present. Chen present. Commissioner Dorsey? Present. Dorsey present. Commissioner Ngordio? Present. Ngordio present. Commissioner Fielder? Present. Fielder present. Commissioner Mahmood? Present. Mahmood present. Commissioner Mandelman? Mandelman absent. Chair Melgar?
Present.
Melgar present. Vice Chair Sauter? Sauter absent. Commissioner Cheryl? Present. Cheryl present. Commissioner Walton? Walton absent. Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you so much, Madam Clerk.
I will now make my public comment announcement. For members of the public interested in participating in this meeting, we welcome your attendance here in person in the Legislative Chamber, Room 250 in City Hall, or you may watch cable channel 26 or 99, or stream the meeting live at sfgovtv.org. For those wishing to make public comment remotely, the best way to do so is by dialing 415-655-0001, and when prompted, entering access code 2662-472-8270, and then press pound and pound again. You will be able to listen to the meeting in real time. When public comment is called for the item you wish to speak on, press star 3 to be added to the queue to speak. Do not press star 3 again, or you will be removed from the queue. When the system says your line is unmuted, the live operator will advise that you are allowed 2 minutes to speak. When your 2 minutes are up, we will move on to the next caller. Calls will be taken in the order in which they are received. Best practices are to speak slowly, clearly, and turn down the volume of any televisions or radios around you. Public comment for items on this agenda will be taken first from members of the public in attendance in the Legislative Chamber, and then afterwards from the remote speakers queue on the telephone line. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. At this time, I would like to excuse Commissioner Walton and Commissioner Sauter from the meeting. Before calling the next item, Madam Clerk, as Chair, I'd like to invoke Rule 3.26 from the Rules of Order to limit total public comment per item to 30 minutes for today's meeting. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak on any given item. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 2, Chair's Report. This is an information item.
Thank you, colleagues. It is a busy spring, and I'm pleased to share several updates this month. First, I was pleased to join Senator Wiener yesterday at the event introducing amendments to SB 63. This bill will authorize a regional transit measure for the Bay Area's operators facing significant operating funding shortfalls in 2027. We appreciate Senators Wiener and Senator Jesse Arreguin's leadership on helping to identify state bridge funds for transit as well. We remain focused on local solutions as well as a regional measure. With the support of colleagues at the MTA, at the MTC, I also want to thank BART and Caltrain's staff for being here to present their updates. Thank you. Later on in the agenda. Speaking of regional priorities, I'm very glad to report that the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's Programming and Allocations Committee recommended elevating the Portals project to Tier 1 in MTC's Major Project Advancement Program. Vice Chair Sauter and I had the chance to tour the Portal project at Salesforce Transit Center, and it is truly exciting to imagine the rail extension connecting with 9 other transit services at that facility. I want to thank TJPA Director Adam Vanderwater and his staff for the tour of the basement and future home of the rail extension. MTC's endorsement of the Portal will help the TJPA and the region advocate together for state funding that is needed to match federal funding commitments in the coming years. I appreciate the support of regional colleagues earlier this month and look forward to the full commission's consideration and final approval this week. And finally, I want to thank TIMA Chair Dorsey and Commissioner Cheng for joining me and our staff for a study tour to New York City last week. where we met with officials from the New York MTA to learn about their first in the nation congestion relief zone program. We also met with a partnership for New York City, Permanent Citizens Advisory Committee of the MTA, Regional Plan Association, Riders Alliance, and others, and sincerely wish to thank MTA staff and all the groups we met for their time, insight, and gracious hospitality. Since the start of operations on January 5th, the program has been a resounding success, with traffic congestion down, 60,000 fewer vehicle trips into the city each day, shorter commute times, increased transit ridership and foot traffic, and reduced noise level. It was very impressive to learn how the broad base of support from business to transportation advocates to labor and local community groups worked together in coalition for over many years to bring this project to fruition. We also happened to be there last Friday, the day that the U.S. Department of Transit had set for New York to seize this program, when New York Governor Kathy Hochul and other speakers held a press event to describe the program's effectiveness and advocate for its continuation. As they said, and we saw with our own eyes, traffic is down and business is up. While we're not actively studying congestion pricing for our downtown, we do have studies ongoing on Treasure Island and on our freeway system. So it was very helpful to learn about New York's path, its objectives, and our freeway system. It was very helpful to learn from others. We wish them well in administering this innovative program. TIMA Chair Dorsey and Commissioner Chan, would you want to say a few words?
Thank you so much, Chair Melgar, and thank you to the CTA staff who organized this great trip, which I thought was extremely informative. As Chair Melgar said, we met with a range of people from the New York MTA, Riders Alliance, the New York City Partnership, and learned a lot about their program on the technical implementation and advocacy side. I will say just sort of globally, having spent much of my career in city government, I'll tell you that my perspective has been that local myopia can sometimes here in San Francisco be the enemy of smart policy making. And I really think it is important that we always research when other cities are succeeding. And it's in the case of New York City, we have a proof of concept now of something that is working. And what is even more telling is, given the political opposition that faced this early on, how the public opinion has shifted. And that's not just showing up in polling data. It was interesting to talk to cab drivers and just to people who are just like, yeah, I was against this, but you know what? It's working. And in a week when we had the book Abundance coming out and a lot of people in policymaking circles are talking about the importance of governing effectively, to me it was a really big takeaway that this is a program that seems to be working. Cities around the world have had successful implementations of congestion relief zones apart from New York. Stockholm, Central London are among the better known ones. And it is, as we said, important that we now have a proof of concept here in the United States. I would say that the conditions that make this an attractive program in Lower Manhattan currently are different than the current situation in San Francisco. But assuming we meet our housing element obligations and also succeed in seeing more people report to in-person work, then we're going to have in the coming years an increased daytime and residential population that might very well create a more welcoming and necessary environment for San Francisco to consider a congestion pricing or congestion relief zone model. In the current political climate at the federal level, I don't know that cities will make much progress in the Trump administration, and I think the Trump administration has made clear they're going after this program. I think that's creating some levels of uncertainty. Like so much of this administration's leadership of federal matters, we are plagued by levels of uncertainty that are really unprecedented at the local level. I have worked in this building through multiple Democratic and presidential or Democratic and Republican presidential administrations over the years in the city attorney's office, so I watched a lot of these play out. We're in uncharted waters, though, with the Trump administration. It is really important that we had this. I think I learned a lot, and I just really appreciate, again, Chair Melgar's leadership, being there with my new colleague, Commissioner Chen, and my gratitude again to SFCTA and to everybody in New York City who just taught us a lot and will be great partners if we ever do move this forward. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Commissioner Chen.
Yeah, good morning, chairs and colleagues. And again, I am also very grateful for the opportunity to join the recent study tour in New York with Chair Melga and also Team of Chair Dorsey, and also with the management team from our TA. It was a very informative trip. And I think I took away a couple lines, especially I think how New York's model of making sure that putting equity and environmental justice at their forefront, and the many protection programs that for the community, you know, for the low-income family, to make sure that there's options to make sure we include accessibility. And also what is amazing is they also done an amazing outreach program with 9 different languages. And also, you know, the program also have a significant generation of revenue that supports our transit capital improvement. This is something huge that I feel like San Francisco can continue to learn. And another key takeaway that I actually find is how the partnership from the New York City, which able to recognize that and came to support from the very beginning, is less congestion needs to more foot traffic, safer street, and a stronger local economy. And I think when I think about San Francisco, it's how can we also make sure that we bring foot traffic to the local, and also making sure that we continue to strengthen our local economy and safer streets for San Franciscan. And also, you know, something that I think it aligns with Supervisor Dorsey, it's the New York City study. They have spent time to study many models, including the global models from Stockholm, from London, from Singapore, to shape their policy, their technology, and their implementation. And they have also, I took away, is like they have proven that they can use smart, cost-effective solution that is very possible. You know, something that amazed me is like they installed 108 tolling points using existing many of the existing infrastructure to save time, save money. That was also something that I took away, that, you know, how can we bring it back to San Francisco to improve our efficiency and also cost saving. And I also, you know, really thinking a lot about our Treasure Island as we're preparing for like 8,000 new homes and welcoming 20,000 residents in the island. How can we work to improve our muni system that also have our equity and environmental piece in mind to address like air quality, reducing our traffic, and support our local economies? And then it's really clear to me that in the trip I learned that congestion management is not just about traffic. It is a path to a healthier, a more livable, connected, resilient, and future-ready San Francisco. And I actually continue to look forward to continue to learn from both in the nation, in the United States, and also globally, the best practices in design solutions that reflect the city's value, San Francisco value, and meet the needs of for our future generation. So again, I want to express my gratitude again for a very informative tour to Director Cheng and your team, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Chen. We now have Suwani Cho, who is going to make a presentation about our trip and everything we learned.
Good morning, Chair Melgar and Chair Dorsey and Commissioner Chen and Commissioners. Suwani Cho, I'm the Assistant Deputy Director for Planning for the Transportation Authority, and I'm sharing slides. Great. So these are some visuals to sort of complement what the commissioners have said. This is a group photo of our delegation with the New York MTA senior staff, Juliet Michelson and Allison Sereno, and Carl Weisbrod of the Traffic Mobility Review Board. We spent a great morning meeting with them and learning a lot, as mentioned, about the technology, about the policies, about the support and the approvals and the sort of long path that it took to get to implementation. In addition to the MTA staff, New York MTA staff, we met with Catherine Wild, who's the head of the Partnership for New York City, and members of the Congestion Pricing Now Coalition, the Permanent Citizens Advisory Committee, Regional Plan Association, Reinvent Albany, and the Riders Alliance. So this is just a brief slide on the congestion relief program. The Traffic Mobility Act was approved by the New York State Legislature in 2019. It authorized tolling to relieve congestion and raise capital funds for the MTA system, which is the New York City subways and buses and commuter rail. The system began operating in January of this year. The charge is $9 for private autos to enter the zone. There are various other rates for various sizes of trucks. And importantly, for the taxis and TNCs, there is a charge per fare that is passed along to the passengers. There are some limited exemptions for transit buses, emergency and specialized government vehicles, and then there are discount programs for low-income travelers. For travelers in general, there's 50% off after taking the first 10 trips in a month. And then for lower-income folks who live in the congestion relief zone, there is a tax credit that compensates them for the amount of the tolls that they pay. And you can see the map that shows the relief congestion relief zone, which is the lower half of Manhattan below 60th Street. So the program has had a very smooth rollout and is performing effectively. 60,000 fewer vehicles, increase in ridership, both subway and bus, more pedestrians on the street, a 70% drop in honking reports, and the program has generated $48 million in the first month. And the photo here we took taking a taxi from the airport, you can see very sort of free-flowing traffic entering the Holland Tunnel on a during rush hour. And this shows some of the equipment that is out on the street. On the left is the sort of the control box, and then you see signage. And on the right is a view of the cameras as cars enter the FDR or proceed along the FDR. Finally, this is just a photo of the rally that was that Governor Kathy Hochul hosted on Friday with the advocates and pointing out some of the effective results of lower traffic, less time spent in traffic, more people taking transit, and importantly, that business is thriving. So the federal government has extended its deadline for the termination of the system for another 30 days, so we'll be keeping a close eye and keeping you informed. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cho. So I don't know if any of you colleagues have any questions or comments for us. Okay, Commissioner Sherrill.
First of all, I think this is incredibly interesting and a great trip for everyone to take. I'm curious how they measured businesses up, and I apologize if I missed that.
I think it's a variety of factors from various business improvement districts and the Broadway, I think it's the Broadway Alliance, have been reporting that business is up, foot traffic is up, Broadway ticket sales, for example, are up.
Great, thank you.
Okay, if there's no more questions or comments, thank you, Ms. Cho. Let's open this up for public comment, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in chamber who wishes to speak?
And the lamp lies down on Broadway. Escape from New York, you know, and the hero is called Snatch. That's what you're going to get, huh? Because your goal is to lock people in the cities. So New York City, by the way, I hope you enjoy your trip paid by the taxpayers here. It must have been great. That's why you say stupid things that you are told to say, not understanding that your future is at stake and that you're going to be trapped in it and maybe be dead soon. Yes. So first off, of course, you can't compare New York City with San Francisco. I mean, if you do, or London. The two worst examples, New York City, London. So far, Paris is not far right now. I mean, it's like, so you want everybody on foot. Why? You know why. You want to lock people in the cities. Transit, you pay. If you don't pay, if you don't obey, you can't leave. That's why digital ID, all the shenanigans. We know where it's going. Everybody knows. How do we get out of it? I don't know. You guys, I think you're done. If you keep taking the money and thinking you're going to be safe, I don't think it's for you, it's over. What else should I say? Yeah, I escaped from L.A. as well. You know, John Carpenter, you know this movie director, right? He's awesome. Escape from New York. It's going to be a total black hole soon. It's coming because people won't take it. Huh? Everything's fake here. No left and right. No Democratic or Republicans. Are you joking? It's all in the same bag. Paid by the monetary system. Who prints the money? Mm-mm. I think we know who.
Okay, operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for public comment. There is no public comment.
Okay, thank you. Public comment for this item is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 3, Executive Director's Report. This is an information item.
Good morning, Chair Malgar, Commissioners. I just want to echo thanks from our delegation, our leadership to the MTA in New York, New York MTA, particularly CEO Jana Lieber and his staff, again, Juliet Michelson and Allison DeSerenio, who spent a tremendous amount of time helping us to put the program together and educating us on the program as well. Swanee Cho as well, I'd like to thank her as our key staff person. And Swanee and I will be returning, in fact, to New York in April to attend the New York Department of Transportation's Equity Summit, which will be discussing this program among many other other initiatives from around the country. So we'll be glad to report back from that work as well. Moving on, I think, Chair, you covered so many exciting updates. I just want to also mention tonight's the Senator Wiener's SB 63 amendments. We understand will be in print for those who are interested in the actual amendments, and then we'll be continuing to work again with his office and the entire region on advancing that through the MTC on which you serve, as well as locally in our Muni Funding Working Group, which did also meet on Friday, last Friday, and we were able to virtually attend from New York, some of us, and really congratulate them on a robust conversation again. This was the seventh meeting of the group where the MTA staff presented six different packages containing various revenue and non-revenue options to help address the agency's anticipated annual operating deficits in future years. So we'll be bringing that back to you all, I believe, in May, after MTA takes the feedback from the working group and brings it to their own board. I appreciate the input of President Mandelman and Chair Malgar amongst all the other stakeholders. Turning now also to an update that happened while we were away, that happened locally and was attended by Vice Chair Sauter, President Mandelman, and Mayor Lurie, as well as SFMTA, and of course the Families for Safe Streets. I'm speaking about the SFMTA Speed Safety Camera Program rollout. Thank you to Walk SF for organizing the event, which helped to celebrate and thank all of the families and policymakers and community members who worked for so long to get to this important milestone. Vice Chair Sauter, in particular, spoke on the years of commitment from local and state leaders, as well as, again, community and advocacy groups for prioritizing street safety and this particular legislative achievement and the policy and program behind it. The Transportation Authority did contribute some modest amount of funds, $150,000 in sales tax, to support the public education campaign, and just want to let the public know that they can go online to SFMTA's site to see the locations of these speed safety cameras and to note that there will be a warning period where speeders will receive a warning, and then they will start to receive administrative fines and for speeding over 11 miles above the speed limit after those first 60 days. Next, I wanted to mention as well another milestone that occurred recently last week, which was the opening of the Great Highway to be car-free and to walking and cycling. I'm happy to announce that there were two sales tax-funded West Side projects that will help support this. Appreciate working with Commissioner Engardio's office and SFMTA and Public Works and all the other agencies. This includes the Sunset Boulevard repaving, as well as the signals, also at Sunset, Sloat and Skyline Boulevard. Thanks to Assemblymember Ting for helping to secure those funds. So a whole set of improvements have gone in to support this work. And again, we were pleased to help support that effort. I believe the public event for the opening will be on April 12th, in just a couple of weeks. Next, turning to the Geary Fillmore Underpass, the community planning study that we are leading together with other agencies, Planning Department, SFMTA, Public Works. There was a planning community-based meeting led by the Planning Department that we attended along with Commissioner Mahmood. This was the Reconnecting Community Task Force, co-hosted by Japantown Task Force, New Leadership Foundation, and the Jewish Community Relations Council. Participants shared information about various priorities and updates, including our staff who attended Aliza Pass to provide an update on our study, appreciated that opportunity, and we look forward to putting forth some community advising and contracting opportunities as well as consulting opportunities soon from our website. So please stay tuned at sfcta.org/Geary Fillmore Underpass. And with that, I conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If there are no questions or comments for our director, let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak?
It's the last meeting I attend here before a few months. I'm going to leave. I forgot to mention on the previous thing. Did they told you about the fake wildfire in Long Island when you were enjoying yourself with in Manhattan? Because Long Island is New York, right? It's right there. Fake wildfire. Microwave energy, whatever they use, we don't care. People know there, the residents know. So, no good. Air quality. So, air quality. If we are under attack from the skies with all sorts of chemicals meant to kill people and to poison the food and the soils and basically every living species here, that's not going to be good with me. Now, here in San Francisco, that's why I said we disobey everything that the government is telling us to do at this point, because it is a fake government that doesn't want to take care of, I should include myself, us. That's it. End of the story. If you think you can be part of this government and be safe, again, I said, you fell in a trap, and you are less intelligent than a rabbit who fell in a trap, because the trapper is not here to save you at the end of the day. He just gets rid of you. Thank you, guys, the useful idiots. Women are being used, I repeat, not only women, minorities, including now, let's go for it. There is only male and females in the world here. That's mammals, see? That's us here. So we don't care if we get a ticket, if we speed, you understand? Because we won't pay the tickets. At least I recommend this. We do this, peacefully, with responsibility and critical thinking. Exactly what this fake government is not wanting to promote.
Thank you for your comment. Are there additional speakers who'd like to speak? There's not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no public comment.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 4, approve the minutes of the March 11, 2025 meeting. This is an action item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster with questions or comments. Let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak? Okay, thank you.
Even though I missed you on March 11, it was a short one. I came at 11, oh, you were gone. So the minutes might have been short. Yeah, minutes. It's like, only 2 minutes. I think everything was wrong already. You need to adapt. Things are going extremely fast you might be dense soon. You need to adapt every time you have minutes. You see, wait a second, what's going on now? Something new is coming. It comes from all directions. You know it. It's not only about transportation, clearly enough. We want the Great Highway reopened. Yes. Okay, why not say that?
Thank you. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment on item 4. There is no public comment.
Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, may I have a motion to approve the minutes? Mandelman, a second, please. Mahmoud, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Okay. On the motion to approve item 4, Commissioner Chan. Chan absent. Oops, I apologize. Commissioner Chan. Chan, aye. Commissioner Chen. Chen, aye. Commissioner Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Engordia.
Aye.
Engordia, aye. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmoud. Mahmoud, aye. Commissioner Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Commissioner Cheryl.
Aye.
Cheryl, aye. There are 9 ayes. The minutes are approved.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Please call the next item.
Items 5 through 10 comprise the consent agenda. Staff is not planning to present on these items, but are available for questions.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster with questions or concerns. Is there a motion, colleagues, to approve the consent agenda? Mandelman and Commissioner Dorsey seconds. Mm-hmm. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the consent agenda. Yes.
Let's see.
Let's do same house, same call, Madam Clerk.
Okay, thank you.
The motion passes. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 11, BART Financial Outlook, Regional Transportation Measure. This is an information item.
Thank you so much. So we have Pam Herhold herself here to give us an update. Assistant General Manager for BART. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Before we get started, Commissioners and Chair Melgar, I'd like to introduce our BART's new and first Chief Financial Officer. He's come over with me today. This is Joe Beach. And I'd like to offer him the opportunity to say a few words.
Okay. Well, welcome, Mr. Beach.
Thank you very much. Thank you for making the time to hear from us this morning. I've only been back in the Bay Area for about 3 months now. One of the things I've been impressed with is how well the transit staff, the transit partners work together, what a good collaborative relationship it is. It's an exciting time. It's a challenging time to be in transit in the Bay Area right now. But I think we're laying the groundwork now with our FY26 budget that's coming out in order to sort of manage costs and to look forward to 27 and 28. I know we've got a lot of challenges, but I'm very heartened by the way we're all working together. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Beach, and thank you for coming yourself in person to introduce yourself.
So thank you very much, Commissioners. I am now ready to share slides. Oops. Thank you.
Okay, there we go. No, that's the wrong presentation.
Okay. Now we're ready. So, as you know, BART is the backbone, the transit backbone of the Bay Area, connecting with nearly every operator across 5 counties, 50 stations, and 5 lines of service. Nearly 90% of all transit transfers in the Bay Area include a leg on BART. However, by far, BART's largest market is San Francisco. Each day, 70% of all BART trips start or end within the city, and each week, 3,500 trains serve San Francisco. The pandemic has had a substantial impact on ridership and revenues. Pre-pandemic, we carried over 400,000 trips each weekday. However, the lingering pandemic impact we all feel, including in downtown San Francisco, is also acutely felt by BART. Weekday ridership is down nearly 60% from what we saw 5 years ago. Weekends are less driven by return to office, and they performed a little bit better. The Bay Area has a unique concentration of employers in tech, finance, and business, areas that we have seen easily adapt to remote work. So looking at the line graph on this slide right here, BART ridership is shown in blue, and this closely mirrors Bay Area office occupancy rates, which are shown in gray. While three-quarters of the pre-pandemic riders have returned to BART, they're only making about half of the previous level of trips that they used to make, and this fundamental shift in travel patterns directly impacts BART's funding model. Pre-pandemic, BART covered two-thirds of our operating costs, primarily through fare revenue and parking revenue. This model had been in place for decades, and like Caltrain, was seen as the gold standard of transit funding. However, in a post-pandemic world, that has turned out to be a major problem, a major weakness for BART. The graph on the right here shows actual operating revenue in blue, historically, and projections looking forward. And then it shows our forecast that we had in gray before the pandemic. And the difference between the gray forecast and the blue forecast and actuals is over $400 million in fiscal year 24 alone. That is the fiscal cliff that we face. We've made some progress in closing that gap, as you'll see on the next slide, but BART's structural deficit remains at $350 to $400 million each year. So we are pursuing multiple strategies to address our financial challenges. These include increasing fare revenue through our new fare gates and maintaining prudent inflation-based fare increases. We are growing ridership through new fare products such as BayPass and working with partner agencies to improve transit coordination. We are diversifying our revenue-generating programs, such as putting more emphasis on generating revenues through fiber optic programs. And we're also reducing costs through a hiring freeze and non-labor reductions. However, the impacts of all these actions are in the tens of millions of dollars. These alone won't close our shortfall. New funding remains critical. Despite our challenges, BART is one of the most cost-effective rail operators in the nation, even while operating in a very high cost of living area. Looking at the cost per vehicle revenue vehicle hour across the U.S., we're more efficient than many similar systems, and since 2019, we've been able to keep our operating cost growth below the rate of inflation, even while expanding service with the recent addition of the Silicon Valley extension. So many ask us a very logical question, why don't we just cut service to balance our budget? Well, service cuts alone will not solve our shortfall. Only 40% of BART's operating costs actually scale with service. For example, during the first full year of the pandemic, we reduced our service levels by 40%. We closed at 9 p.m., and we ran trains every 30 minutes. But that only saved us about 12% in operating costs. And that is because no matter what service level we're providing, BART's 50 stations, 131 miles of rail, and other physical assets still require regular maintenance and security. In addition, major service reductions would turn away riders and put BART's remaining $300 million of operating revenue at risk. That's also known as the death spiral. So instead, BART is taking a different approach by focusing on growing and retaining riders. We revised our schedule to better match demand and refocused maintenance efforts to improve reliability, and we saved $9 million a year to boot. We are also focused on safety and security, and as of today, we have new fare gates in 25 of 50 of our stations. And I'd like to give a big shout out to our partners here at SFCTA for providing 50% of the funding for the fare gates at the 8 San Francisco stations. And also a special thank you to Vice Chair Souter and Commissioner Chen for joining us last month at a ribbon cutting event at Embarcadero Station. We have also increased uniform presence in the system, particularly with doubling the number of officers that are riding trains in the system. Overall, crime on BART was down 17% last year, even with more riders riding trains. Cleanliness is also important to our riders. We have increased deep cleaning of the cars, and more station scrub crews are focused on our busiest stations. In partnership with SFMTA and SFCTA, We are still providing elevator attendance at our heavily utilized downtown BART Muni stations to continue to provide safe and clean vertical circulation. We're also investing in our system. We're running all new train cars and are particularly proud that tight project management helped save $400 million on the first phase of our rail car procurement. I also want to highlight some of the ways that SFCTA is supporting BART. So Prop L will contribute $100 million to BART's $4.7 billion core capacity program. And this program will enable BART to run more frequent and longer trains. SFCTA's contribution will support the expansion of BART's railcar fleet and the nearly complete installation of two new traction power substations at Montgomery and Civic Center stations, which will power the expanded service and provide redundancy in the core of the system to avoid service disruptions. BART is also renovating elevators at San Francisco stations to improve reliability and availability for those that need them. These are riders with disabilities, seniors, families, and travelers with luggage. The four downtown BART Muni stations are funded with the help of SFMTA and SFCTA, and Glen Park is funded with support from SFCTA, and we are actively seeking funds for the remaining San Francisco stations. We are also replacing 41 escalators at the four BART Muni stations with new energy-efficient escalators that will improve maintainability and reliability. We are also installing canopies at the street-level entrances to protect these new escalators. We are also, last on this slide, investing in regional coordination by co-leading regional fare coordination with MTC. The all-you-can-ride Clipper Bay Pass is good on all operators that accept Clipper, and it's been a resounding success. It has grown ridership by 30% for those riders that are participating in Phase 1 pilot. 30% is an amazing number. All this effort that BART is putting into the system with the support of our partner agencies is really paying off. I just want to point out here that we are seeing an increase in our customer satisfaction results. We survey our riders every 2 years. And riders in our last survey from last fall gave us a thumbs up at 73% approving of BART and its investments. Riders gave BART high marks for train interior and station cleanliness, which were up 14 and 8% respectively. Separately, we continue to work with the region to advance a funding measure. We are thankful to Senators Wiener and Aragin for their support in advancing SB 63. BART priorities for any revenue measure include, first and foremost, sustaining transit operations, but we also support regional coordination, equitable access to high-quality transit, and we definitely support investment in transit over investment in roadways. And ideally, if funding would allow, we'd like to enhance our service. We know the region would be a better place with transit service enhancements. The BART board and BART's leadership team are taking an active role in funding discussions, including participating in a recent Senate Budget and Fiscal Review Committee hearing on transit funding. We are very much supporting the $2 billion ask for flexible transit funding in the upcoming state budget. And we also are participating in other task forces such as the SB 125 Statewide Transit Transformation Task Force and CTA's Cap and Trade Subcommittee. So the last slide here. While solving the funding problem for all Bay Area transit is critical, I'd like to highlight what the Bay Area might look like without BART, as BART is the backbone of the regional transit network. We would see negative impacts to the region's economy, congestion and emissions would increase, drivers would spend more time in traffic, buses would slow down. The transit network as a whole would be severely impacted with cascading effects across more than 20 connecting operators, and a failing transit network would have disproportionate impacts on protected population. So I think we can all agree that the Bay Area is better with BART. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was a really great presentation. Do we have any questions or comments, colleagues? It looks like we're okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
The BART is great. I mean,
apologies. Just one moment, please. Okay. And okay, Speaker, you may now speak.
Yes, thank you. It's Thierry. The BART is fine. I mean, it's been there for a long time. I think the reason why your thing is going down is because of the change of the older cars, which were perfectly fine. So now, obviously, you invested, I don't know how many million dollars to change these cars, which could have run much longer. Second, people start being fed up with your ads, propaganda ads, on the other side of the rails. You see, they are tired of this because it's propaganda. So you can't do anything, you see, out of touch. The technology you keep using now, you know, the cars, people don't like it, I think. I mean, a certain proportion of people still awake don't like it. So they don't ride BARTs anymore. What else? I mean, there is a whole bunch of things to, if you want to serve the people. First off, I think the BART should be free. That's it. You serve the community. It's free. I don't know who you finance this, but we're going to have to find another system anyway. Otherwise, it's always the same shenanigan of money, 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 money. No, it doesn't work. Private, public now. We know the system. Huh? It's not going to work. I'm not a specialist on here on this issue. Obviously, it's over. I'm over everything. But that's it. So, I don't know. Work on it seriously. These are things I told you that which are, I think, pretty clear. If you make a poll, people will say, yeah, we agree. They don't care. They wear a mask. The other thing is that the separation of people after the pandemic of unintelligence, you see. So when you are in a car with people, they don't want to talk to each other anymore. It's not good. When you say 75% less crime, it's a joke. 75 out of what? 5? So it makes 2 less. Yes, sure. I mean, no problem.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in chamber who wishes to speak? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no public comment.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Thank you so much, Madam Clerk. And thank you so much, Ms. Herholt, for the great presentation. Let's go to the next item, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 12, Caltrain Financial Outlook, Regional Transportation Measure. This is an information item.
And we have Ms. Michelle Bouchard here in person to do this presentation. Welcome.
Great. Thank you so much, Chair Melgar. Commissioners, my name is Michelle Bouchard. I'm the executive director for Caltrain. Really so much appreciate the opportunity to share the podium with our fellow operator, BART. I'm joined here today by Caltrain's Chief of Staff, Casey Fromson, but I did want to provide just a few introductory remarks if I could. I also want to, in absentia, thank Commissioner Walton, who has served on the Caltrain board for quite some time and really has provided much guidance. And also, Tilly, you and the TA staff, appreciate your support and partnership. And just to mention a few things, got to give a shameless plug for our launched electrification program that the TA made a significant investment in and continues to invest via Propositions K and L in some very, very important work we continue to do on the railroad. You will hear some remarkable parallels today with BART as a fellow rail provider. But I do want to perhaps steal a little bit of shine from Casey's presentation just to talk a little bit about what electrification has done. In the past month, Caltrain has reached 50% of pre-pandemic ridership, the highest point ever since the pandemic. And remarkably, we also have changed to what we're calling a regional rail, which is providing more frequent service throughout the day. And we're really yielding results from that because on the weekends we're actually above pre-pandemic, so more than 100%. So the promise of electrification really is yielding results. But fares and re-attaining a 75% fare box recovery ratio is likely not to happen. And even with returning ridership, fares will not be enough to cover the gap, in large part, again, because of the high fixed cost model that is typical to rail modes. So cutting to a solution will also really not yield the results that will bring Caltrain back to health, to also provide rides to our customers, as well as to partner with community economic recovery. And so Casey's going to talk about that a little bit. So with that, if we could share the slides, and I'd like to introduce Casey Fromson, Caltrain's Chief of Staff. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Ms. Fromson.
Good morning, everyone. I will start at the beginning. Just a quick reminder that Caltrain is the kind of sister agency to BART. We cover the peninsula, the whole west side, 77 miles, 31 stations, 3 counties, 20 cities, and we touch 40% of the population in the Bay Area through one of the cities that we go through. It's multiple hubs. In fact, Palo Alto is our second busiest one, but San Francisco is our anchor station with the highest ridership, and certainly what happens in San Francisco influences the entire system for us. This slide just demonstrates what you heard from Michelle, kind of the world has continued to change for us. These numbers are what it looked like in 2019 from our very high ability to be self-sustaining. 73% of our operating sources covered from tickets. We had member agency contributions, no deficit, and a really highly focused pattern of commute service, with 81% of our customers commuting 5 days a week. Today, that looks much different. We don't have as much coming in through ticket sales. We do not have the same direct contributions from member agencies, but we certainly have support through Measure RR, which we are very grateful for. That has resulted in about a $75 million average operating deficit. But as Michelle said, our system has changed, and we'll talk about why we do think we have a bright future, but we need to think about the funding model that will best support Caltrain. So again, these numbers are not as big as our sister agencies in the Bay Area, but they're significant to Caltrain, especially based on a proportion of our operating budget. We are trying to turn the knobs that we can control because we know there are some things that are out of our control. Some of the strategies and revenue growth opportunities that we've put forward, similar to our sister agency, BART, you know, what can we do on the fare side? So we've actually introduced a $1 youth fare because we want to think about that next generation of transit riders, making sure that they get on the system and bring their parents along as well. We have had a business pass in place for 20 years called the Go Pass. This year, we're going to make some significant changes to that because we want to make sure we maintain that strong relationships to the businesses along the corridor that have consistently supported Caltrain. This pass makes up about a third of our operating deficit, and or not deficit, revenue, and it was half during the pandemic. So we know that business models have changed, and we need to change with them. So you'll see some changes there. And then the Pass Forward program, that was taking excess passes that we had from businesses and putting them into the hands of our low-income and historically disadvantaged riders to, again, broaden that base of people that know, love, and ride Caltrain. On that experience side, we have consistently had positive brand recognition for our service before the pandemic, throughout it, and even today, but we know there's always more we can do. And with electrification, we've really kind of, again, turned that knob even higher with free Wi-Fi, additional service, and doing what we can even for special events. We had a Billie Eilish car that people loved, making sure you can ride it for all different purposes. On the regional coordination side, that's another one. There is always more we can do, and we should make it a seamless system. No matter what system that you are riding on, whether it's a bus, a rail, a ferry, you should be able to get from one system to the next, and we're participating in all those efforts to make sure that it's a really smooth, you know, positive experience. On the non-fare revenue side, there's some short-term things we're looking at, such as advertising, but we have to look at the long-term, too, and look at our transit-oriented development, what else that we can lease, and as Michelle always tells us, what can we monetize on the railroad? We need to look to see what we can do for ourselves. On the cost containment side, every single all-hands meeting we have, we mention our cost reduction efficiency program and ask the people at all levels of our organization, if you see something that we could be doing to be more efficient and save money, let us know. You know, we are in the business of, we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to run the most efficient system we can. We're also freezing operating FTEs, have implemented crew scheduling efficiencies, and are even doing things to make sure we get the full benefit of the electrified system. When we have regenerative braking, we should get the benefit and the costs associated with that benefit to the grid. We have been looking at as well of, you know, what are the implications if Caltrain did have to cut service, and have looked at different models such as no weekend service, hourly, segment specific or corridor level shutdowns. We're revising those right now so we can best describe what this impact would look like. But as it's been said, rail has fixed high costs. Whether we run two trains or 20 trains, we have to maintain those tracks and a lot of those services to the right safety levels for a service to be out there. And so it really is a doom loop. If we cut service and we take out one of our key funding models, you know, not only are we hurting our bottom line, but we're also hurting the people that are going to operate our trains now, and we hope in the future, and the people that need to ride the trains and use this system as part of our greater ecosystem of transit mobility in the Bay Area. The Caltrain board is obviously very focused on funding solutions and what is the path forward for Caltrain. They asked us to commission a poll, which we did in January of 2025. It was asking likely voters in the three counties that we go through, you know, what do you think about Caltrain? And we were so proud of what we heard. And again, this isn't just about the riders, but we heard great feedback from them. But we have a high favorability rating. 82% of the people that took this poll said that they appreciated and had high ratings for Caltrain. It was the highest rating of any of the major transit systems in any of the counties that we operate. In San Francisco, it was 85%. We also saw that people agree that there was a need for transit funding, 70%, and 76% said relieving traffic congestion was also a priority for them. We look specifically at polling of something similar to what we had with Measure RR, and we had close to two-thirds support in San Francisco and San Mateo, but it was more challenging in Santa Clara County. And for us, this just represents a data point and a point in time, and we know a lot can change, and we know we need to come up with the funding solutions that's going to work for all the counties along the corridor. But we do think no matter what solution comes forward, Caltrain's high favorability ratings would make it an asset to any funding measure effort. So a little recap of where we are, and I'll try not to repeat much of what Michelle said, but as a reminder, Caltrain has been around in one form or another for 160 years. It's the oldest continually operating passenger railroad. That's a picture of our steam trains. We had diesel trains for about 70 years, and today we have brand new electric trains. And this is something that we shouldn't be proud of just because it's in the Bay Area, but we actually get calls from across the country. This is a nation-leading effort, and other systems want to know how we did this, especially on an operating railroad. In August, we had a wonderful event at the San Francisco station with our governor, Speaker Emeritus Pelosi, and many of the supervisors here. So we are so glad that you could be part of these celebrations, because in September, we expanded it not just to San Francisco, but up and down the corridor. We had a celebration in every single city that we operate in along the corridor. 16,000 people came and RSVP'd to our events, and over 100 organizations participated in different ways. And the trains are wonderful, but it's really kind of the service is what's making the difference. It's a four-legged stool of it is faster because the electric trains, the capability and that the technology associated with them allow us to have faster express trips, faster local trips, and even in the segment that isn't electrified, they get on our system and it's faster. We have more service. We used to have half an hour service or hourly service. It's a half an hour everywhere, peak period times every 15, 20 minutes. It's a show up and go type of system now. And then certainly the experience, free Wi-Fi, quieter, smoother outlets, digital display signs, even a baby changing table in the bathroom is what really makes the whole system something that you want to get on and enjoy your experience while you're on it. And then, you know, I don't think I have to speak much about when we have one of the oldest diesel systems in the state and going to these brand new zero emission systems. We see dramatic benefits there. Our board was committed to ensuring that all communities benefit from our system. And you can see from the map in the top right-hand corner, that's a picture of the equity priority communities along our corridor. And since 2020, we had a policy as we grow and change our service, that we are thinking about that in mind. So you have some of the other stats there of that Pass Forward program that I mentioned. You know, we want to be a service that has a diverse, broad ridership and really works for everyone. And with the type of regional service that we have in place now, that is much quicker in the morning, in the middle of the day, in the peak period on the weekends, it will serve your needs for a lot of different purposes. And you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a couple of pictures of riders that are out there. I think the one on the right is my favorite, where she's saying, "We're still crying with happiness." I don't think we can get every single rider to say that, but at least one did, and we captured it. And then you can see at the bottom there that 91% favorability is what we saw in the January poll from riders. Michelle already covered this. Here's a visual background and a picture that I'm sure she didn't know I was going to put in here, but you know, it really is about our future, and we are seeing that. We are not at the level we were, but we are on a path, but we're going to need some help to get there. And that really comes to the summary, where we are very supportive of the efforts that are happening at the state budget level right now. We know there needs to be different models and conversations about what funding measure will work for the three counties that we go through, and we need to make sure that it's a solution that works for each of those counties. So we're very supportive and engaged in those efforts and want to continue to be a partner to the SFCTA, to the Greater San Francisco, and certainly to the region to make sure we can find solutions that work for all of us, because we want to build on these investments that we just made, not just for today, but for future generations when they know we made the right decisions, to make sure that we have a Bay Area that people can live, work, and thrive in. And this is part of the solution. Whether or not you ride the train or don't, this is what is going to help us have a region that has a better quality of life for everyone. So with that, we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much for a very thorough and joyful presentation, Ms. Frompson. No, wait, don't leave. Come back. So I'm sorry that Commissioner Walton missed the meeting today, because we've actually been talking quite a bit in the last couple weeks, as he has been on your board for all these years. And the question is, regional measure language that has been unveiled in the amendments, does that work for you? How are you feeling about that?
I'm happy to take a stab, and then Michelle can as well.
Okay.
So we actually have our board meeting, our subcommittee tomorrow, where we talk about it, and every month we talk about it at the board meeting as well. So I'll talk about the staff perspective on that. I think the staff perspective is it would be best to find a regional solution that works. You know, we certainly don't want to needlessly compete. And so the language that we have out there, I think, has the flexibility we need. I mentioned it in the slides, and it's important for especially the function of how the Caltrain board was created, that all three counties need to participate. So I think it still speaks to some of the work that's ongoing right now to make sure that there's the right level of commitment between the three counties. And we certainly need to see that, I think, for everyone to feel comfortable. But I think the language that we've seen out there today has some of that flexibility in place, and we need to continue to make progress in maybe some of the other conversations that are going in parallel with what could be enabling legislation that helps us all.
Yeah. I just want to reiterate, because Caltrain is multi-jurisdictional, we just need to make sure that whatever regional solution is implemented, if there are certain Caltrain counties that are not part of that measure, that there are commitments as part of the regional effort for those counties to participate and invest in Caltrain's operation. We had some great conversation with Senator Wiener's staff prior to the release of the language, and I think there is a clear understanding as part of the language that the Joint Powers Board, which is comprised of the three member counties, really are involved in having some conversations amongst themselves, and that this language allows for those conversations to continue to take place around what type of participation would be expected from each of the counties. So short answer is yes, the language is workable, but I did want to highlight those couple of things that are real important to us.
For sure. Thank you, Ms. Bouchard and Ms. Frompson. If there's no other questions or comments, colleagues, let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak?
Okay. No matter how your presentation is, put together to confuse people, at the end, I know things. It's a script. The most important thing, electric vehicles pollute much more, because you destroy the environment with that, because you need to dig to build these stupid machines. It comes from where? How do you give the power then? Hello. Okay, so this is a joke. We know it. Now, when you say efficient, I love it. Efficient for who? For whoever controls the thing. Now, I know. Thank you to remind me that Coltrane owns BART and all things. Perfect. So you are guilty, basically, Coltrane here. You don't want to serve the people here. What's your goal? You didn't say the goal. What is it? To do what? To make everyone happy or not? No, it doesn't look like it. It doesn't sound like it. The future is everybody needs to be happy, focusing on beauty. So it's not going to work. You understand? Because your goal here is, first off, not defined. Create a better system for what? Okay. Certainly, again, not for the people. We are fed up. That's why the revolution is on. It's going to be peaceful. So you're going to fail because whoever orders you to say what you say is too unintelligent. That's as simple as this. It cannot but fail. So the future generation will know who was responsible. See? So you pay after. Great. Good job.
Thank you for your comment. There is no more public comment in chambers. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment on item 12. There is no public comment.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, let's go to the next item, please.
Item 13, internal accounting report, investment report, and debt expenditure report for the 6 months ending December 31st, 2024. This is an information item.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Fong.
Yes, thank you for the introduction. Cynthia Fong, Deputy Director for Finance and Administration. I have a quick update for the first 6 months of fiscal year 24-25. As of December 31st, we had a total of $134.1 million in assets, $293.4 million in liabilities, and this includes our 2017 sales tax revenue bond, which consists of $193 million of outstanding debt. In addition, we had also a balance of $22.9 million from our revolving credit agreement outstanding as well. In terms of revenue, we have collected $95.3 million, and this is in accordance with our budget. In addition, expenditures were we've incurred $75.6 million expenditures. This is below our anticipated budget, but we anticipate more costs to come in the next 6 months. In terms of our investment compliance, we still hold a large amount in the city pool. It sits at 61%, and we are in compliance with the California government code. In addition, we have enough funds with the help of our revolving credit agreement for costs over the next 6 months. In terms of our debt compliance, as I mentioned, we have an outstanding sales tax revenue bond. We continue to make the regular biannual payments. In addition, we made our first draw from the revolving credit agreement, $22.9 million, and that was for light rail vehicles. We anticipate making more drawdowns from our revolving credit agreement, and of course, we'll come back to the board at budget season to discuss that more in detail. With that, I'm happy to take any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fong. It doesn't look like there's any questions or comments from any of the commissioners. Madam Clerk, let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in chamber who wishes to speak on item 13? Thank you.
I didn't want to do it because 13, okay. Actually, we don't care, right? It's money again. So again, no, the problem is the money. We need to get rid of the money system. No matter how long it's been going on, we need to invent something new. I've got a very strong idea how to do it step by step to, you know. So we don't care who is trying to own you with money here anymore, because this is going to fail no matter what. Besides, it's coming, and the collapse of the monetary system is coming. It's definitely big time. So we need to create something to anticipate here. No, we don't want digital money. Huh? That's not going to work, because after that, it's enslavement for everyone. So this includes, of course, this involves, I mean, this covers the transportation system, of course. Okay, so whatever. No more money. At least think, put that in your brain here. It's coming. No more money, no more money. Yes, why? Because money is the problem.
Thank you for your comment. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no remote public comment.
Okay, thank you. Public comment on this item is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 14, introduction of new items. This is an information item.
Okay, it does not look like anyone has any new items to introduce. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Please call the next item.
Item 15, public comment. Is there anyone in chamber who wishes to speak on item 15?
Okay, yes, just because this afternoon I won't have time to, there is no time, to express enough. So I won't cover the fact that people want the Great Highway reopened. Joel, I'm sorry. I mean, your recall is a total fake. I know it now. It's all fake. It's all part of the thing. So we want the Great Highway reopened because we don't need a park here in San Francisco. We need to be able to get out of the city easily if you work in Daly City or Pacifica, back and forth. That's it. End of the story. You create more pollution, indeed, by the crossover, or Sunset Boulevard. Hello, 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 everyone. So that's what I'm going to say as a public comment here, because honestly, the rest is silence.
Thank you. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 16, adjournment.
We're adjourned. Thank you.